4, strap it down. 3, flip it over. 2, calibrating for fun. Blast off! Welcome to the Dan Fogler 40 Experience Podcast. Get ready.
There he is.
Here I am. How you doing, man?
What's up, buddy?
This is the podcast, the Dan Fogler 40 Experience Podcast. But here are our faces.
Yes, here are our faces. Mohawks. No Mohawks, buddy.
No.
Greater than the last time I saw you, though.
Yeah, me too, man. Wait, were you saying I was gray or you're gray?
Oh, me. I mean, I probably shouldn't wear this hat. I look completely gray.
Yeah, but that's how you got the part. That's how you got the legacy part, right?
Yeah, maybe. Might have had something to do with it. Although they colored this for the younger stuff. And then just put a big gray wig on me for the rest of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And maybe they were inspired a little bit.
Yeah. They're like, he looks old enough.
Yeah. How the hell have you been, brother? Like, so where are you right now? Tell us.
So I'm in the Dominican Republic. I'll give you a little view of what I'm looking at here. I'm in my little hotel room, but look at that, man.
Look at, oh. Oh, that's, oh, the coasts and the beautiful beaches. Look, oh, tropical, delicious.
Yeah, man. It's been, you know, our movie that we shot was, it was truly one of my favorite experiences making a movie, but it was down and dirty, as you remember. We were out there in Death Valley for, I don't know how long, and it was a completely different, this is like shooting in paradise. So I think part of what I love about this job that we get to do is we get to go do all sorts of different things. Never is one scene like another scene. You know, we're always doing something different. So this has been a treat for the most part. A lot of work, but it's been fun.
So, all right. Well, okay. We'll get to scenic route in a second. I just want to, I have like a little outline of how I want to do this interview.
Okay.
So, Josh David Duhamel, do you know what your name means?
No, I don't.
Okay, really? That's no, so funny. No one like looks up what the true meaning of their name is. So I do this for all my special, awesome, cool guests. So Josh David Duhamel. I love finding out people's middle names. That's fun. Say again.
What does it mean?
Okay, so Joshua means God. All these things are derivatives of God a lot of the time.
Uh-huh.
So Josh is God is my salvation.
Okay.
David means beloved.
Okay.
Okay. And Duhamel means from home.
Yeah, of the it's like a
of the hamlets.
Yes, of the village or something. I know it's something like that.
Yeah, so God is salvation, beloved from the village.
Oh, well look at that. You know, my dad gave me a nickname as a kid. It was Joshua David Michael Leroy LaRue Lamont Duhamel.
Yeah.
So that's what I go by a lot, especially if I'm in a hotel somewhere. my AKA is Leroy LaRue, which is the shortened version of Joshua David Michael Leroy LaRue Lamont Duhamel. So I go by Dr. Leroy LaRue. I'm probably giving up my alias for any hotel that I'm
in. Yeah, now you have to switch them up now, man.
But I was in Montreal a few years ago, and the girl that was there to pick me up for you know, to take me to whatever I was going to goes, what does Leroy LaRue mean? I go, I don't know. It's just a shortened version of my nickname. She goes, oh. And I was like, what do you mean? Oh. She goes, nothing. Never mind. I go, what are you talking about? She goes, well, I just looked it up in Urban Dictionary. And
anyway,
so I go look it up in Urban Dictionary, and I'm not going to say what it means, but it's not you know, God is our salvation. You know, it's something quite different. So I like your adaptation of my name much better than Urban Dictionary's.
Gotcha. I'll look it up, man. I know LaRue is French for the street, right?
It's nonsense. If you want to go look it up, you can. It's a little.
I have to now.
A little Easter egg for our podcast today. Yeah.
So okay. So the first time, my introduction to you, brother, was when I don't know if I ever told you this, but there was like this synchronistic thing where when I first got out of college and I was trying to get into some semblance of shape, I would go down to the gym in my building and they would have the TVs on and I would go on the treadmill, and a lot of the stations were kind of just not playing the best stuff at the time that I was like, for me, you know, at the time that I was working out. And I was always watching Vegas because that was the channel that like came through perfectly. And I was like, okay, I dig it, man. And I came to it because of James Caan, and I was like, Sonny, you know, fucking yeah. Godfather. Right. But then I just basically, man, I must've watched like that whole series. And you're really excellent on it. And which is why when I heard about Scenic Route, I was just like, yes, I'd love to work with that guy. Yeah. So Vegas, tell me about that experience and working with James Caan, man.
Oh man, going way back now. That was my first job after all my children in New York, which was basically my first job. I'd moved back from New York. I said I was going to give myself 3 years on that show and then I was going to give it a go in Los Angeles again. And so that was my first job, almost simultaneously with Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. I did the pilot of Vegas and I did Win a Date with Tad Hamilton almost like right on top of each other.
Yeah.
But who knew that Vegas was going to go 5 years? We knew that we had something cool. I knew that I got to work with James Caan, who was awesome. I love the rest of the cast too, by the way. I still keep in touch with all of them. And it was just, you know, it was for me a great way to learn again. I mean, you're on that set every day. We had this beautiful, we built this giant casino on a lot in Los Angeles. Everybody still thinks we actually shot it in Vegas, and we did shoot the first episode there, but after that everything was shot in LA and they just made it look like Las Vegas. And the show was a lot of fun. It was like, you know, it was super silly sometimes, which drove James Caan crazy. He's like, we got a million fucking stories we could be telling, and we're talking about ninjas, you know. Jimmy was the best. I still keep in touch with him. It was just his birthday, I think last week or the week before. And
how old is he now?
I'm going to guess 80 something. Wow. He's getting up there, but still has that same spitfire personality. But you know, it was a great opportunity for me to work with a guy like that, you know, Sonny Corleone from The Godfather. I got, you know, yeah. It was intimidating at first, but we became great friends over the years.
That's amazing, man. So like that, he was my favorite from The Godfathers out of everybody. He just, Sonny was like, he was just the most badass, you know?
Yeah. He was a badass. He still is a badass.
I hope, yeah.
Recently.
Say it again?
He was through some health stuff recently. You know, he lived hard. He wrote it hard all the way through the 70s and 80s. And did, you know, he was in rodeos. I mean, the guy's story is unbelievable. He lived in the Playboy Mansion for a while. He rode rodeos. He was, you know, I think he played football at Michigan State. You know, he's just an amazing character. And he had back issues this last year, and it really kind of kicked his ass. But I think he's on the mend now. He's feeling better. But what a great mentor for those 5 years.
All these guys, him and Pacino and De Niro, and I got to work with Walken, you know, all these like these guys that we grew up with that were just so classic. And I want to try and work with all of them, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, that era, you know, in the 70s, especially for me,
yeah,
was the best decade for movies. It really was. You know, Nicholson was in his prime, and you know, like you say, Walken and Brando, all those guys were just crushing it. And the movies were made a little bit differently then, and that's really what I watched when I first started acting, was some of those movies from the 70s, because they just they let it kind of sit there in a classic composition, a lot of the scenes, and you could just, they let it play out, and they didn't overly edit things, and I just loved that about that whole era.
Was Nicholson your favorite? He's my favorite.
I think so. Jack Nicholson. Jack Lemmon is another one of my favorites.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's a ton of course, Brando. You know, Tom Hanks is awesome. I mean, there's a lot of great young guys now too. And I don't know if I call DiCaprio young, but I love watching that dude. I think he's fantastic. And Ryan Reynolds I think is fantastic. But you know, guys that I watched and learned from were definitely. I get to work with Mel Gibson in about a month and a half, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, what's project is that?
It's called Bandit. It's based on a true story. I have the book over here somewhere. I'll grab it.
Cool. Yeah.
He's got a book called The Flying Bandit.
Okay.
This guy, he was this notorious, the most notorious bank robber in the history of Canada. He robbed like 59 banks
in
the 90s. And
are you playing him? Playing the bandit?
Yeah, and Gibson's the guy trying to catch me. It's going to be fun.
Oh, crazy, man. Who's directing it?
Alan Unger.
Okay.
Yeah. Canadian, really good director. So I'm excited to work with a guy like that, too, because, you know, Mel Gibson came into his – he was a guy that didn't really hit it until a little bit later, you know, and I always hoped that I would be able to – sort of pattern my career after somebody who, you know, early on it was all about, oh, he's just a pretty boy, you know, and I hated that. I hated the fact that was what people saw, and I wanted people to see me more than that. I think as we get older, people start to, you know, and the more you do and the more experience you get, you just get a little bit more seasoned, I think, in some ways. And Mel Gibson is one of those guys that as he got older, I think got better and better.
I thought just working with you on Scenic Route and just how fucking just gosh that we got with Death Valley, man, was just, my God, what a trip. Like what a
trip is right.
It's aptly named. I felt on Mars, and making that movie, I was like, oh yeah, no, this guy's the real deal, you know.
Oh.
And I think that's a lot of the reason why you wanted to make that movie, because you were, I think you have something to prove, you know. You're just like, I'm a fucking, you know.
Well, you too.
All you guys, yeah.
I really, I
say felt, again.
That's why I felt the same way about you. You know, I worked closely with the Guest Brothers on like casting that, because I came on early. I go, we got to find somebody who can, you know, sort of balance the comedy and the dark sort of weighted stuff that comes along with this. And that's why you were like perfect for that role. But how fucking awesome was that? I mean, I still, I have so many, let's just talk about that for a second, because there's still things that I remember from you that I still practice to this day.
Oh.
The first thing I want to do is apologize. I don't know if you remember that one time we were doing something and I threw a basketball at you and it hit you like square in the nose. And you're like, your eyes were watering. I don't remember why I did it. I thought you were just going to catch it. I don't know if I did it. I don't know if I thought it was a Nerf basketball, but it was one of those things where as soon as I let go of the ball, I was like, oh no. And boom, your eyes were like watering, because, you know, when you get the nose, and you never got mad at me. You weren't happy with me, but you didn't lose it. And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck was I just doing? But that's just one thing. I'll apologize for that now. Another thing was,
you're forgiven.
I don't know if you remember when we were doing that scene, and my dad was there that day. My dad loves to come and watch.
Yeah.
Making of. My mom loves to come to the premieres and doesn't really care about the actual making of it. She just likes to put on a pretty dress and go to the premieres. But my dad was there, and we were doing the scene where I was being buried. We were burying me in the sand. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh God.
And there was the barometric pressure that day dropped like 80% within like an hour. It went from like 75 degrees down to like 38 degrees or something crazy. Yeah. It was the craziest shift in weather I'd ever seen. Still to this day, it's like it went from warm and cozy to like freezing in like under an hour.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. But one of the things I really, really remember about you, and I still do this shit, is we would talk a lot about you're such an interesting cat. do you remember doing the things in your room, and you had the sun coming perfectly through your eye hole, and you made it look like it was an alien invasion, because like crazy shit was happening outside your window, and I was like, what is that? Because we were out in Death Valley. You had me convinced you were going to see UFOs. But the thing I really want to, that you really, really taught me, and I still do this, is sun gazing. The sun gazing in the pineal gland.
Yeah.
Remember, you'd sit out there one morning, it was like the morning before we started shooting or something, and you were out there like looking into the sun. I was like, we had rooms in that little hot springs hotel, and we had balconies out the back. You know, out there in the morning at sunrise, just watching the sun. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, bro, it's a pineal gland. It activates the pineal gland. You breathe in through this eye and you breathe out through that eye. And it activates your pineal gland and it opens up your brain. And it works. I tell people that now and they're like, no way. You can't look into the sun. I was like, yes, you can. Dan Fogler told me you can. You can do it. Yeah. And it like improves. It like wakes your brain up. It like shines a light on your brain. It's amazing.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. yeah, for sure.
I think it actually improves your vision too.
It does. If you do it at the right time, if you do it in, you know, sunrise and sunset.
Yeah.
Sunrise. Yeah. Yeah. Good for you, man. Yeah. There's other techniques that I've learned with that, but I'm still doing it too. And, if you do it right, you'll never need glasses. It's a great exercise. And, it's your pineal gland, your third eye feeds on light. So that's a great way to meditate. So good for you, Beck. I'm glad that's, that thing with the Death Valley was, I mean, I'll never forget that place. That was just insane. There's so many things about it were just so freaky and surreal. So that was weird with the, for some reason, I was convinced that we were going to see aliens too while we were out there. UFOs.
Oh, I know.
But one day I was in my room and I had my phone up and I was videotaping myself. I think I was going over my lines or something. And I looked through the camera and the light coming through the peephole, hitting the camera was like refracting light off of the camera lens. And it looked like there was like, honest to God, it looked like there was this floating, like undulating, pulsing, close encounter orb, but it looked like it was in my room. It looked like it was inside my room with me. And my God, I was like, oh my God. People would have believed that if I showed that around.
I believed it.
Everyone on set believed it until I was like, guys, no, it's not real. But, and the weather was like we were on Mars.
Yeah.
Like you said, it was like cozy and warm 1 second, and then it would shoot up to like, you know, 100 degrees, and then it would shoot down in like the same day. It would go to, and then it'd be whipping sandstorms.
Yeah.
That was insane, man.
Yeah,
never forget that. Yeah, I'll be like, okay, well, you know, we survived that. You know, we could fucking, I could survive anything.
Yeah, it was a tough one. It was a tough shoot because we had no money. We had a really tight window to shoot it in. Luckily, we had the Getz brothers, Michael and Kevin Getz, who I thought were great. That's still to my day one of my favorite movies I've done.
And that's so awesome, man. And it was you and me. It was just you and me, and it was like this like we could have done it as a play. You know, we had to memorize everything. You know, that was the rehearsal period beforehand. With I'm vaguely remembering the basketball, but that was the, you know, we were in a rehearsal period and we had to like, we had to do that or else, you know,
if we went out there
in the middle of the fucking elements trying to figure out our scenes, that would have been a disaster.
Yeah.
But we had it all, we figured it out all beforehand and then we just went. You remember that? We did that first scene and it was like a 15-minute take and then the crew just like started clapping. It was like they were watching a play, right?
And we couldn't have pulled it off had we not done those rehearsals because those scenes were long and Kyle Killen, is that the writer? Killen. Kyle? Yeah. Great writer.
Yeah. Okay, so you're doing Vegas, and then all of a sudden, Spielberg is just like, I like that episode you did where you went to war. Would you want to come and do my Transformer movies? And you're just all, yeah? I mean, what was it like that?
Well, that's essentially what happened, and that's 100% the truth. I mean, I'll never forget twice that he sort of helped me along in my career. One was to get Win a Date with Ted Hamilton. It was a DreamWorks movie, and he'd watched the screen tests. And he goes, if I was making this movie, I'd hire that kid, which I was like, that cannot be true. And then years later on Vegas, which was also a DreamWorks TV show, he saw some stuff that I came back where I'd gone off to Iraq and come back with PTSD and they were pretty dark kind of episodes and he kind of lost his mind a bit. And he was the one who recommended to Michael Bay to have me take a look at me for Transformers. And so I found this out and I called Leslie Feldman.
Like before Feldman. Yeah. Okay.
Leslie had talked to me and told me that Steven had seen what I did on the show and recommended a Bay to look at me for Transformers. And I was like, oh my God, how do I thank this guy? It's Steven Spielberg. I mean, who would have thought this kid out of North Dakota was being sort of, you know, championed by this guy. I mean, and he's never hired me, by the way, so he can't be that big of a fan, but he was a good to hire me, you know. She said, well, call him. He's at home now. I was like, what? So they patched me through to his house and he picks up the phone and we talked for 15 minutes.
Whoa.
And we sat there and just talked and he talked about what, you know, exactly what I just told you. And so I'm forever grateful to him for that, because those things were huge sort of stepping stones in my career. And I have him to thank for that. A lot of it.
Amazing. That's like, you know, classic Hollywood story there. The kid stays in the picture, that kind of deal there. that's awesome. So I was almost in Transformers.
Really?
I was almost so Michael Bay, I was doing Balls of Fury, okay?
Right.
So I was number one on Balls of Fury. It was the first time I was ever the lead, and I was exhausted. And I go in and, you know, whatever. I go in and I meet with him on like a Sunday, and he says, "Yeah, come and do Transformers." And I was just like, "And I was supposed to be Shia's best friend, or something."
Yeah.
Yeah. Who ended up being that? That was what's his name? The African American guy.
Anthony Anderson.
Anthony Anderson.
Oh yeah.
So obviously they went another direction. But yeah. I was supposed to be that character.
Yeah. Oh, you could have been great in that part. Anthony was great too. I thought he did a fantastic job in it.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah. So you know, it all worked out for the best. But I'm sitting there in Michael Bay's studios, and I'm imagining like
down on Colorado Street. In Santa Monica?
Yeah, in Santa Monica. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God, I mean, this is like so surreal. Like, and he's telling me about this Transformers movie that he's making. And I was just like, oh, I don't know if I have the energy right now. It was one of those, just like, I should have done it. I should have just said, yes, I'll do it. I'll make it work. But I was like, I don't think I can be doing Balls of Fury and then on the weekends, like in my spare time when I'm trying to, you know, I was like, I don't know if I could do that. And so he was just like, you sure? And I was like, well, maybe if you, like if there's a voice for one of the Transformers, I was like, I love Bumblebee. Can I do his voice? He was like, yeah, we're not doing voices. We're not doing a voice for Bumblebee. I was like, shit. So I said, no. But I always regret that. I was, how was that experience working?
Well, my experience on that was very similar to what you just said, because I was in, I can't remember how the Spielberg part of it came in. So I had actually met Michael earlier, because I was there meeting his producers on a different movie called The Hitcher. And he popped his head in and said, and introduced himself, and said, hey, when you're done, come over and check out what I'm doing. We're making Transformers. This is before I heard about it. Then like about a month or two later is when I actually went in like formally to go on it. But I remember when he first popped his head in to tell me about Transformers, I was like, oh my God, that's a terrible idea. because I was thinking, okay, I like the cartoon from the 80s, but that just sounds like, it's dated. And then he brought me, and I went over to talk to him afterwards, and he showed me the art that they were sort of the conceptual design of what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, now I get what you're doing. And yes, I want to be a part of this. I would love to be a part of this, but I didn't hear anything until about a month or two later when I got called in to go meet with him on it. But yeah, I'll never forget that either. That was like one of those moments where, you know, Bay pokes his head in and says hello, and, you know, cut to 10 years later, we're shooting the fifth one.
You think they're just going to keep on making more of those, man?
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to. I know he did after the fifth was probably it. I didn't do the fourth one, but after the fifth, I think he was done. You know, they're probably going to make derivations of it. I know, like they did with Bumblebee, but with different directors and different sort of directions.
How does that compare to Scenic Route with in like difficulty level? Like, you know, is it apples and oranges, obviously, but
totally different things, you know, like ours was such a small, intimate kind of thing where it was just two guys on the side of a road and it felt like a play in a lot of ways. We had very little equipment, you know, on Scenic Route. We just kind of, it was very bare bones, which is, I love making stuff like that because it's really helped me, you know, as I've gone on. Little movies like that sort of inform me on bigger movies. And also you learn about, you know, on a big movie like the Transformers, you got helicopter flying over another helicopter on top of this giant gimbal that's going to be this spaceship that's, you know, it's just like massive. And it's, I look at it now, you look at a movie like Scenic Route and then you look at Transformers and there's just so much waste, so much money that is just sort of like burned because there's so many people and everybody's got a job, but it's like, do we really, it's just a much different animal where it's a very efficient running machine when you're in a little thing like that, because you just don't have the time or money. Whereas something like Transformers, they got endless amounts of money and they can just sort of, and there's, you know, you got a giant, you know, techno crane on standby every day for 8 months. And that would, you know, 2 days of that would have blown our budget on Scenic Route. You know, it's just, so they're just completely different animals. On Transformers, you feel like a tiny little cog in a giant machine. You know, you're just an ant working with all the other ants to make this thing work. Whereas our movie was dependent on us just going out there and just grinding it out.
So on Scenic Route, and you guys should see this film. There's a point in it where, and Josh referred to it earlier with he doesn't have his mohawk. So in Scenic Route, he kind of has like a, this like epiphany and he gives himself a mohawk.
No, you gave me the mohawk.
I give you the mohawk.
You gave me the mohawk.
Well, the question is, was I ever there? You know.
Well, you were there, but were you there in the end?
Well, I got you.
You know, that's why I love that movie. It's sometimes it drives me crazy, these open endings where it's sort of left up to the audience to figure out what actually happened. But
yeah,
this part of the reason I love this movie is I thought they handled it so beautifully. And in the end, like, it's like, wait, was he there? Did he die out there, or was he actually there? And if he did die, when did he die?
Yeah, when did he die?
Was it was like the last third of the movie just me and I was imagining you, or like with like
surviving? Right, exactly.
Or what?
Yeah, when did I die? And yeah, it's very.
It's a really heady movie. I love it.
So we're doing this movie, and I'm looking at Josh, and he's got this mohawk, and it's so Travis Bickley, you know, and I'm just like. Looking at you, and I'm just like, and I was in the middle of shooting my movie Don Peyote,
yeah,
and which is like a, you know, Join the Caravan Productions, and I would see people and write scenes for them as we were going along, and so that's what we did for you. I saw you, I was like, hey, you want to be in this crazy movie I'm making, and you just said yes, like immediately. It was like in the same conversation. It was like I think I showed you like a couple scenes from it, and you were like,
yeah,
cool. And yeah. that solidified it. I was like, this guy is fucking cool, man. He is just up for anything, you know? And you were. And people should see that movie because I think that's one of the best sequences in that movie in Don Peyote is your sequence when you come in and
eating lunch out of the dumpster.
Yeah, the dumpster divers. And the can't do that today. No, that was all sanitary.
That was all pre-COVID.
Yeah, that could have been its own movie. Seeing it, that sequence was so 70s to me. So yeah, midnight cowboy, you know, like, yeah.
You know, and it was, I still had like remnants of my mohawk from our movie, if you remember.
Yeah.
I started to grow in, but I still left it. I still had that big bushy thing across the middle, but
you look great, man. You look fucking great. That's what I was like, you got to keep that mohawk for this because and we made you even look more like kind of like a vagabond Travis Bickle, you know.
Didn't I have feathers or something in my hair, or was is it in my hair? Did I have earrings with feathers? I remember like purple feathers.
Yeah, there was a real Native American vibe going on there. Living off the grid. It was all about living outside of society. And your character was going to, douse the public water supply with ayahuasca. What was
ayahuasca,
that?
Ayahuasca.
Was that a gunshot? What was that sound? Was that
it was either my girlfriend or it was the cleaning lady. I don't know.
Okay,
just could be an intruder. Who knows? We'll find out in a second.
All right. Well, that'd be cool.
Just trying to add some drama to your podcast here.
Yeah. I appreciate it. I'm glad
we did. It was nice knowing you. If things go south here in the next couple of minutes, it was nice knowing you, Dan.
You're a big guy. You can handle yourself. Okay. So here we are. Jupiter's Legacy. So, fuck, man. Okay. So I'm a fan of the comic book. Okay. Mark Millar. Yeah. And Frank Quietly is like one of my favorite artists. Were you a fan of the comic book?
I wasn't. I didn't know anything about it, to be honest. I'd read the script and I loved the script because it felt like this. And I wasn't even a huge fan of superhero stuff. I was just like, it was like, you know, that ship has sailed for me. Nobody's going to hire me as a superhero at this point. But this came along and it was like this sort of, this dude who was kind of on his way out and trying to impart what he's done for the last 90 years onto his kids. And that has caused a lot of dysfunction within the family. And it's a great story about, it's a saga in every sense of the word. It starts in the 30s with this guy, Sheldon Sampson is my character. I'm the son of, he has two boys, myself and Ben Daniels plays my brother, and we're sons of this steel magnate, this guy who this we're like the Rockefeller, we're like this rich steel family.
Yeah.
But the market crashes in 29 and everything goes south. And my father, I think in the first or second episode, kills himself because you find out in the next episode that he'd been leveraging the company's money to sort of expand. And he knew that was coming and it was going to come down hard on him, and he couldn't take it. So I watched this happen. And after that, this guy goes on this crazy sort of spiral and starts having these visions, and these crazy coordinates keep showing up in his head, and he needs to go find these coordinates. He needs to know what this means. And so the movie or the show is 8 episodes, and it's about the period part of it. The 30s are about him recruiting this group of people that he sees in one of his visions to go with him on this journey. And they end up on this island that ultimately gives them these powers. But it's the journey to that, which I think is so fascinating. And then it jump cuts back and forth to present time when he's been this guy now for 90 years. So from the 30s, and now he's this grizzled old superhero who's, you know, been carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders for so long, and he's world weary, and he hasn't been the best father because he's been so preoccupied with being this guy, the utopian, that has caused a lot of conflict within the family. And he lives by this code, where they don't kill, they don't govern, they're there to serve. They catch them and they lock them up. And that's not sitting well with the new generation or with the public. And so he's got this conflict on what do I do? You know, this is what we've lived by. This is what I've lived by the standard for so long, but it's all kind of crumbling. And so you go back and forth between how they became who they are and what are the repercussions of that 90 years later. And it's a fascinating story. I thought Mark Millar did an amazing job writing and crafting this thing. And I thought Netflix did an amazing job of executing it. You know, they really put the money and the time into it. And I've watched now, they slipped me the 8 episodes. It doesn't come out till May 7th, but they took a lot of prodding to get them to let me see it. If I'm going to be talking about it, I got to see this shit. And it's so good, dude. I'm so proud of this show. It's really beautifully shot and acted. Like the actors in this thing are just, they're all in, and it's really good. I'm hoping that, and it's a tough audience. You know, this genre brings with it a very discerning audience, you know, and if it isn't good, they're going to let you know. And I'm sure there's going to be haters, but I got to believe that people are going to dig it.
Yeah, Netflix, they're putting out good material, man. I have faith it'll be good. I think, did you get to, you got to fly around and lift up buildings and, you know, shoot lasers out of your eyes and do all that?
I did. I get to do all that stuff. And again, this wasn't really something that I cared to do. It wasn't like I was like itching to go put on a suit and be a superhero. It wasn't like it was something that I didn't think I was, you know, I thought that would have happened 15 years ago if it was ever going to happen.
Well, there's a lot of, dude, there's a lot of superheroes you could play. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm looking at you now and you got the gray at the temples. That's Reed Richards right there. You could do a Reed Richards campaign for Fantastic Four. Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic?
Oh, see.
You don't even know.
I know who Mr. Fantastic is. I didn't know his real name.
Yeah, Reed Richards.
My son would know. I'll tell you that. My son would know. My son is a superhero junkie, man. He loves superheroes. Another reason I did this is because I knew that he would really appreciate it. He can't watch it because it's pretty hard edged.
Yeah,
I'll let him watch some fighting sequences and stuff. But
how old is he?
He's 7 now.
Oh, okay.
He loves superheroes. He draws. He's a little artist. He loves drawing. That's all he draws is superheroes. And I remember this is awesome. So he was what 5 when we were shooting this, 5 and a half, maybe 6. And he saw me for the first time in this suit, which is pretty imposing. I got this muscle suit and I got this big white, beautiful costume made by the guys who make all this stuff for Marvel and everything. They're like amazing. It's super expensive, these suits. I can't even, I probably can't even disclose what these things cost. But anyway, he sees it and as only a 6 or 7 year old could, looks at me and he goes, at first he was like, oh my God. And then he looks a little closer. He's like, it's too white. It's too white. And I go, what? I'm thinking I look badass. He goes, no, it's too white.
Huh.
I looked at it. I go, you know what? The kid's got a point. And I went to the producers and I said, you guys aren't going to believe this. And you can take this or leave it. But my son, who loves superheroes, said that my suit was too white. And they looked at it and they go, you know what? He might be right. You might be right. And they looked at it. And then they put in some stuff on the suit, which is sort of hieroglyphics of like the alien sort of forces that gave us these powers. And they sort of incorporated them into the suit and they were a little bit more gray.
Huh.
Who's there? Oh, it's my girlfriend. We're good.
Not who goes anymore. There?
Hi, babe.
Sorry.
We thought it might be an intruder. So anyway, they incorporated this stuff into the suit, which offset some of the white and sort of, you know, gave it a little bit more texture. And I'll never forget that. And I told him that the other day and he was so proud. He's like, oh my God, I have saved.
I influenced it. That's amazing.
I lost you.
How is it wearing it? Is it flexible or?
Not really. They're not the most comfortable things because you put that thing on, it's just sort of like all day long, it's just like. So you're constantly trying to like stretch the thing out and give yourself some room. And, you know, it's hard to take a piss. You got to have somebody go in there with you in the bathroom, hold it while you go to the bathroom. It's just, it's not.
Wait, what? You got to.
No, not hold it, but hold the suit.
Okay, gotcha.
let me clarify.
Yeah. I always wonder about those things, like Spider-Man, like head to toe, like you can't piss, you can't go to.
No, they gotta have some little, you know.
Yeah, you'd think they'd make a flap.
They would, dude. You'd think they would. It's like, yeah. But they don't.
No. Superheroes don't go to the bathroom.
Yeah, so you put that suit on, and then you put the muscle, and then over the top of that, you put the shell, like the actual covering of it, and it's pretty tight, especially the new ones. When you have one you've been wearing for a while, they loosen up a little bit, but
yeah,
but you do feel badass in these things. I remember when I first walked in, you know, I'm a little lanky and kind of gangly. In person, when they have that suit on, you just become like this. And people sort of step aside as you walk through the room. I was like, holy shit, this thing is like, this guy has like, you know, I got the big beard and the long gray hair. It's a pretty imposing sort of silhouette that they give you, which, you know, it commands respect, I guess.
Even I'll though, tell
you. Know, as soon as you take the thing off, it's back to you. And you're like, eh.
Yeah,
pretty emasculating. I'm not gonna lie.
Taking that suit off. How tall are you? I mean, everyone's tall to me, but how tall are you? You're like 6'5", right?
6'4"-ish, almost 6'4".
Yeah. So, well, shit, man, I'm excited. So it's May 7th. That's when it starts. I can't wait to watch it. I love all this comic book stuff. Like the fact that all of these things are becoming. You know, television shows and TV, you know, and everything is
converted. Well, you're in a good position, Fogler. I mean, I know you've got Moon River and a bunch of other stuff that you've done. You might be next.
Yeah, I am, man. I mean, I got Moon Lake, which is...
Not Moon River.
Moon Lake, we're developing into an animated show. And I see you do a shitload of voiceover stuff. You know, I'm always going to call on my friends, but you're working on, you're doing Harvey Dent in the fucking Long Halloween. When is that out?
It comes out soon. I don't know exactly. I can't remember the date, but it comes out pretty soon. I got to play Harvey Dent, Two-Face. It was fun.
Dude, that's my favorite comic book Batman comic from Tim Sale, The Long Halloween.
Yeah.
And I think they the recent the new Batman movie is based on The Long Halloween. I may be wrong, but so how was that, man? How that's a major fucking DC character.
Yeah.
Is your kid just like, holy crap, my dad is Harvey Dent? Like,
he's got all kinds of questions. He's not really impressed as much as he is inquisitive.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, you're gonna be. He's like, so you're gonna be Two-Face. Okay. So what do you like? What does that mean? What are you gonna be doing? So you're playing Harvey Dent, and then you're playing Two-Face. Like, what do you look like? And what is your voice? What does your voice sound like? How do you differentiate your Harvey Dent from your Two-Face? What does that look like?
Wait, these are my questions.
Yeah, exactly. I'm telling you, this kid is a superhero lover. He just loves it. But no, it was fun. You know, it's always. You're not like in the trenches like you are shooting a movie, because they kind of do all the hard work and then you come in and just do the voice, and then you go back in later and do more of the stuff, and then you get to see like what your voice sort of looks like.
Yeah,
you know, animated. But yeah, it was fun because especially the Two-Face part, like there's this shift that happens after he gets. You know, after he becomes Two-Face, and it becomes this much more sinister sort of gravelly dude. And it was a lot of fun to sort of figure. And it's funny because I remember recording, because we had two recorders, went in the first time, did it. Then I had to go back in the second time to sort of pick up certain things. And, you know, I had to remember how I did that voice, because it's a very different feel than the Harvey Dent character, and it was a very specific sound, and I couldn't remember how I did it when I first got in there. I was like, oh my God, this was a year ago. How do I pull that back up?
Right.
So we had to, it took a minute to get back to that Two-Face voice, but I love doing voiceover because it's purely, you have to bring to life something that is animated and it's not you, and there's no visuals other than what's animated. So you have to bring that same sort of tone to whatever they animated. I did another one, which is equally as badass, is that they did it. There's a Blade Runner animated show coming out, which is
no way.
Super dope. I mean, what they did was, it was like this weird hybrid of live action, animation, and mocap, and it's an animation unlike anything I've seen. It feels kind of like a, I don't even want to say video game because it's not. It looks real, but also looks animated. But they were able to somehow combine these two, and it's like visually, it's unbelievable. The Batman Last Halloween is purely animated, which is awesome. But the Blade Runner thing is a different sort of medium that I've seen.
Holy shit. I can't wait to see that, man.
Yeah, it's cool.
So speaking of Blade Runner, so the other thing that I'm doing is Brooklyn Gladiator. That's my other comic book that we're turning into a film, man.
Are you really? You told me about that.
I did. And if you have time in October, I'd love for you to be in it. If you know, I know your schedule is crazy, but I think there's a couple parts in it you could play, but I think that I would love to see you as, there's a part in it that's basically like the Terminator, who is just this unstoppable force of nature that keeps pursuing the hero. We got Bruce Willis, Ezra Miller is going to be in it, man.
Nice.
It's coming together. So if you're free,
yeah, man.
I would love to have you in it.
Well, you like I told you, I would love to do it if I can. Yeah, it just depends on what's happening with Jupiter's Legacy. I know that I'm done after like mid June, but then it just depends on when they pick back up, because I got to kind of do as they say.
Cool, man. Well, if it works out, you know, we'll see what happens. Break Legs with Jupiter's Legacy, man. I can't wait to see that. It's out May 7th. And you're working on some great stuff. I can't, the Long Halloween, the Blade Runner animated. I can't, that sounds great. Is there anything else in the pipeline coming up you want to
do? Well, if you haven't seen it yet, Dan, I want you to watch Buddy Games, because that's of all the things I've ever done, that was, as you know, as a director, you know that those, the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into that stuff.
Yeah.
Is the most gratifying. It's the most gratifying thing I've ever done, because I was, you know, we conceived the idea. So all the way from inception through the birthing it to the world was I was like in it. And to see that it did as well as it did, we're doing a second one.
Nice.
Well enough to do a second one. So, you know, we got hammered by the critics, but we knew we were going to from the very beginning. But the people are loving the movie. It's really, really, really funny, man. And if you get a chance, check it out.
Buddy Games on Netflix.
Buddy Games on Hulu.
On Hulu.
Yeah, it was on. It was, you know, on all the platforms. It was in, I think, 400 theaters, but now it's on Hulu. And it's laugh out loud funny.
That's great, brother. And congratulations on the sequel. Are you in these as well, or are you just direct?
No, I was in it. I was in it. It was myself, Nick Swartzen, Dax Shepard, Olivia Munn, James O'Day, cool. Kevin Dillon, Dan Bacadall. Really, really funny cast. We had no money, no time, but the movie is hilarious.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'll check it out.
There's some things in that movie you can't unsee, I'll warn you.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for the warning. I, you know, whatever happens with Brooklyn Gladiator or whatever, I hope we get to work together again, man.
Yeah, man.
I have a lot of fun with you. Keep kicking ass, brother. You're just...
You too.
Yeah. You keep on building your legacy, Jupiter's legacy.
I'm trying. You know, we're hustlers. Yeah. You and I, we're hustlers.
Beautiful, man. I'll let you get back to your day off and your girlfriend and your awesome life, man.
All right, brother.
All right, man.
Peace.
Peace. Thank you.
Later, dude.
See you, buddy.